Finally, we're here. You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 4. Got you again! It's Punk News Podcast number 399.9991, International Goth Week. We are back on the Punk News Podcast. Adam's still MIA. I think he's at the goth club doing the goth thing. He's got the white pancake makeup on. He's got the bat cape on. He's got, you know, the Count Dracula medallion. He's listening to some Skinny Puppy. You know, he's trying to chat up some girl in like 9 foot tall boots. You know, so Adam White will be back soon. He's getting the goth out of his system right now. But it's International Goth Day right here, May 22nd. So we're gonna goth it up ourselves. First of all, we hear it with reviewer Tom Trauma. Tom Trauma, what kind of goth are you?
Well, I don't think I'm hardly a goth at all, honestly. But in honor of, much like the sex episode, in honor of Goth Day, I'm only wearing a strategically placed sock. The difference between this time and last time, I wore a filthy white sock. Today, I'm wearing a black sock.
So you're more into, I guess, what you would say, the raver goth scene, if you will.
I did not say that. I don't even think I know what that means, but...
It means it's you're goth, but you're also a raver, and you wear, like, Skittle bracelets.
Well, obviously, those light sticks, those glow sticks, I'm big into that, yes. LSD, and that's all my stuff.
We are also here with news editor, Tricky Ricky Frankel. Tricky Ricky, what kind of goth are you? Are you the kind that wears, like, the top hat and, like, the, what do they call it, like, I guess, the seaman's coat? Are you the kind of goth that wears, like, a corset and, like a span, and not span,
you don't have seaman on your stockings? You don't have seaman on your coat, do you, Ricky?
What kind of goth are you, Ricky?
I'm one of those South Park goths that smokes too much cigarettes.
Fair enough. And of course, I'm.
What are you, John? What kind of goth are you?
This is featured out of John G. I'd like to imagine that I'm kind of like one of the old school goths that is like not like handsome, but is actually kind of like scary looking, you know, and wears like kind of like not like Victorian era clothes, just like. Davanian kind of clothes, just like, you know, maybe a cape.
I thought you were going to say you're like Danzig on Portlandia.
Is he a goth on Portlandia?
I don't know. He's very pale and he's wearing all black.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of Danzig, I saw the Misfits 4 days ago.
And
it was really, really cool. It was in the Newark Arena Prudential Center. Sound was absolutely terrible. I mean, I actually haven't been to like a big arena show. Actually, not that long, probably about 4 years. And before that, probably not 10 years. Well, not more like 4 years, because I saw Van Halen and Roger Waters. The sound, the band was really, really good. Doyle and Jerry and AC and Dave Lombardo all, you know, kind of did the evil lifestyle thing, where it was like loud and noisy and more, I guess, visceral and violent than it was precise, which I appreciated. That's one of the things I like about the Misfits, is they are so jacked up and wild live. Danzig himself was sounding really, really good. People have talked about his vocal issues in the past, and I think he does have some vocal issues. I mean, the dude's like 63, so I mean, you got to remember that. However, on like the really like nasty songs, like "Death Comes Ripping," he sounded great. And then on the crooner songs, he actually was sounding really good too. So he's able to control his voice. Isn't quite the same as it used to be, but he's able to control his voice so that he still sounds good for both those kinds of songs. Overall, the show was just really good. It was only the Misfits only played for 1 hour and 15, but it felt like a full set just because they played like 30 songs, something like that. Because Misfits songs,
that's probably
so
why
short.
They had so many opening acts too, huh? Because they knew they were going to play a short set.
Yeah, you're most certainly right, because I mean, some people paid $500, $600, you know what I mean? And for 1 hour and 15, it's not that long. Although honestly, it didn't feel like we didn't get our money. Well, I only paid $100. I don't think I'd recommend paying $500 to the Misfits.
So what kind of tickets you get for $100?
Yeah, how far back were you?
I got basically the worst seats in the house for $100.
What were your fees on those, John?
Well, it was a $66 ticket, and so it came out to $100 afterwards.
Wow!
Oh my God, that's like almost 40%.
They really need to give you something to bite down on when you pay that much. That's like 50%, Ricky. 50%.
It is.
That's good.
I mean, it's like get a shot of whiskey and a piece of wood to bite on.
at the show, I did wish I was closer. But that being said, I didn't wish I paid $500, you know. One thing that did happen, though, is I think a lot of scalpers bought a whole bunch of $500 tickets. And as we've seen with the Rolling Stones, is there's really not much of a markup on $500 tickets. So $500 tickets a couple of weeks before were going for like $200, which I thought of buying and then selling the ticket that I had. But you know what? It's like, well, I actually probably would have done it had I had more time. But I just put it in my to-do file and never got to it. You know what I mean? So I do wish I was on the floor, but not $500 worth. The sound in the arena was terrible everywhere. Like you couldn't hear what Danzig was saying between songs, and the noise just bounced around. So the songs were especially noisy sounding. That being said, it still sounded great, and it was really, really cool to see. I think most surprisingly is, you know, the Misfits music is very dark. And when you go see Danzig or Samhain, it's like people are dark and angry. But this was almost like a celebration. Like people were there to have fun. Like people were having a great time, smiling, laughing. So to a degree, it was a certain validation for the band, I guess, if you will. Guess how much parking was? How'd you know, Tom?
I don't know. I just guessed.
$40 for parking is insanely steep. The most I've ever paid at a show is 30.
You go to a football game or something, though, 30, 40, 50 bucks is not unusual. If you go to a bigger sporting event.
Sporting events.
I was driving up, and on the way driving up,
dude, have you seen those guys? They're jacked. It's basically a sporting event. Three of the four guys in the band are jacked.
I was driving up, and I was saying to myself, fine, I'll pay $20 for parking, even though I don't want to. I'll pay $20. I get there, I see $40. Listen, you ain't going to catch the JJG paying $40 for parking in most situations. And so I found street parking like three blocks away, surprisingly. But I mean, guess how much t-shirts were?
$40.
$40. Guess how much
That is a screw job. They're probably like shitty, like Fruit of the Loom, not even like good concert t-shirts.
Yeah.
Well, I guess what was most disappointing about the t-shirts is they were just kind of corny looking. They just like took like the Misfits logo.
I saw them, our group, John, our friends there at Seventh House, I saw them. I thought same thing. I'm like, they almost look like homemade. like they just bought a bunch of like ones from Hot Topic and just wrote on them.
Yeah, it's like, man, for $40, they could have at least paid a graphic designer $500 to, like, make a cool design.
But it's just, like, the proof you were there, you know? I mean, I get it. And I get the whole celebration thing. You know, listen, a lot of people older than me that never got to see him, and it's like, I see people, like, grown men, like, oh, 30 years I waited. They brought their kids, and they're all, I mean, it was, I don't know, man. It's pretty exciting, I guess.
Posters were $30, and they weren't terrible. They weren't great. I didn't get one, but honestly, now I kind of regret not getting one.
Did you buy anything or what?
I came ready to spend money, Tom, but I saw $45 t-shirts and $30. Like, if it was a $20 poster, I would say here's a $20. But, like, that, like, there's a mentally, there's a big thing between $120 and a $20 and a $10 or two $20s. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like $120 is like, all right,
I've told you, and I know you get mad at me when I say this, but I think Danzig is trying to make as much money as possible because I think he wants to retire.
Well, sure, he's trying to make as much money as possible.
But no, but I mean, I think for specifically because he's ready to be done. Mm,
maybe. Well, listen, he's 63. That's retirement.
Yeah, he's like born the same like age year as my dad. I mean, he's an old codger.
He was having a good time. What I will say is they didn't do the Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis thing where like Danzig and Jerry only hugged. They didn't do that. Like they didn't even really acknowledge each other. You know what I mean? So
they did the Johnny and Joey Ramone thing.
They did. They really did. This is not the end.
They're going to play Chicago and Detroit some weekend. They broke up in Detroit. That was the last show they ever played was in Detroit. They're going to come back. They're going to play Detroit again.
What I'll say this is, I don't know if we should talk about this or not, but Tom, as you know, the Seventh House Facebook group is a very restrictive group, very restrictive.
Very into everything with Danzig. We're talking about like how you think about Striper all the time. These people, I mean, the Striper Slayer, they go to bed.
There's a Freudian slip right there.
Well, you know, I got a little backstory behind that. But anyway, they go to bed thinking about Glenn Danzig and they wake up thinking about Glenn Danzig.
No, but you cannot say anything, not even anything critical. And you can't even say anything non-critical, non-positive. Everything you say, there has to be positive
won't even say Danzig because it's like Voldemort or something. They call him like D-Man or it's like he who cannot be named.
No, D-Man is the weird guy that runs. Also, have you seen the guy that is claiming to be Danzig's cousin that I'm pretty sure is not Danzig's cousin?
Dude, you know what else I saw on there was his mother's obituary. Like she died the day of the show. Is that legit? Yeah. Did you see that?
Let's talk about that briefly. I was thinking about putting that in the podcast is smaller than the site. So I was thinking about putting that in my review, but I thought it wasn't proper. Like you know, a little too personal. Danzig's mother did die the day of the show, before the show, and he still did the show, which, I mean,
In her honor, Danzig sold the ticket that he was going to give to her for $500. Too soon.
Too soon, Tom. I would say. I mean,
I'm gonna get thrown out of the 7,000 group.
I mean, you definitely could excuse Danzig for not doing the show. Well,
she was 90 years old. I don't know if she was in poor health or not, but yeah, that's pretty intense, man.
That's really intense.
To go from the euphoria of the show to, and if it is euphoria, I'm telling you, Danzig's all business. I don't know.
He was having fun, Tom.
Was he?
I'll
have to take your word for it. You were several hundred feet closer to him in the outskirts of that arena than I was here in Michigan.
Exactly. Yeah. I was like in your backyard, basically.
I couldn't see.
I mean, honestly, like there's a lot of money on the line. So like financially probably would have been difficult for him
people
to cancel.
Traveled from all over the place. It was amazing watching that group it was crazy, man.
So I'm very sorry that Danzig lost his mother. I mean, that's horrible. But I mean, she was 91, though, on the other hand. You know what I mean? That's a pretty good run. But he did the show, and no one knew, obviously. You know, that's the fickle finger of fate. You know, you're up and you're down, you know, just like that.
It's brutal, man. It was kind of interesting, too. You know, he's an eye tie like yourself, John Paizan.
He is.
And it's like, she survived by her son Jim and Steve, and you know it's just a normal like Italian mother with all these children and grandchildren, and then stepdaughters or daughters-in-law or whatever, and then like Glenn of Los Angeles.
Yeah, then it says Glenn of Los Angeles. They're all like down the block from her, you know, in blank, New Jersey, blank, and Glenn in L.A. You know,
no grandkids.
Danzig's the man. I mean, people diss on him and stuff, but he really is the man. Like, what other artist has achieved what he's achieved and made the amount of fantastic music that he's made? He really is a legend. And maybe he's not the nicest person, but that's not his function. His function is not to be your friend. His function is to make awesome art, which he has done. And the Misfits show.
There's a whole Facebook group of people who would die to be his friend, John.
Well, I don't need to be his friend. You know what I mean? Like, but you're right about that. Oh, but the point is this is we're going to not get off topic. Anyway, Danzig is the greatest. The show is great. It's worth $100. I wouldn't spend $500 for it, but that's a decision you have to make. But I would say a club show would be way better. I think I might have enjoyed Samhain a little bit more, honestly, because it was more unexpected and it was a lot cheaper and the sound was a lot better and he did every Samhain song. That being said, it was cool to see the Misfits. I don't know if it felt like the Misfits 1983. It really felt more like Glenn Danzig and Jerry Only. You know what I mean? Like, it did feel like – I didn't feel like I was seeing the Misfits. I felt like I was seeing Danzig and Jerry Only.
The tickets said Glenn Danzig and Jerry Only bigger. They had their names bigger than the Misfits.
I wonder if that's just because my cousin Bill still didn't realize that Danzig was singing for the Misfits. I said, "Oh, I'm singing the Misfits," and he was like, "Well, who's singing now?" I'm like, "Danzig, you idiot!"
They don't want it to be confused with like the Jerry Only led Misfits who are playing at like 500 seat clubs.
Right, exactly.
The one that I saw.
It's like I have a Misfits ticket stub for like $14, so beat that.
A couple other things I wanted to say is, Tom, you're talking about other shows in the Misfits Facebook group. Someone leaked a contract. I don't think it's a real contract because I was looking it over. Some of the things look like they were written by a lawyer, but some of the other things seem extraordinarily amateurish, so I don't think it's true. But however, the contract that did leak, which I think it's fake, but I don't know that it's fake, said that they have to do 10 shows. So, and we're up to number 6, I think. So there's that.
That was 5, right?
I thought 5 or 6. I don't know which. Something like that.
Well, there's two. There's Denver, Chicago, then L.A., Las Vegas. I think this is the 5th one.
But wasn't there 2 Las Vegas shows?
I don't think
or
so.
Or 2 L.A. shows?
I mean, what was the writer wasn't like No Brown, M&M's, 5 Fleshlights, and like a, you know, like a thing.
Five?
Of, well, if they each want their own, they're not going to share. And like, you know, a box of wet wipes or something.
Well, the contract itself was only like 2.5 pages, which that kind of contract you think would be a lot more, you know, and be more detailed. I was put off by the lack of detail and the lack of specificity in the language itself.
I think somebody just sat down on their computer and just knocked this thing out as a joke.
Yeah, I think somebody like Googled like music contract and like, you know.
Did it have a dollar amount on it?
No, it didn't. But it wouldn't necessarily have to because it was a settlement agreement of their previous lawsuit and an intention to do 10 shows, you see. But what I was going to say is
I'm telling you, Detroit's going to get one of them.
Maybe.
And I'm going to go.
I would go again. I would hope the sound would be a little bit better, but it was cool. One last thing is, man, $500 tickets, $40 for parking, $15 for drinks, $40 for t-shirts. I think Americans are being foolish. Most of the people going are not the kind of people that should be spending $500 for concerts, you know, and we are kind of reaching a interesting point where, like, only the richest of the rich can go to concerts or sports games.
Or, did you feel like you were surrounded by the wealthy at that concert, John?
I did not, Tom.
No. Yeah, I was going to
say. I did not. No, but that's the thing is you can.
But
even
they're
argue,
spending. This is like that's probably their vacation for the year, you know?
Yeah. Well, I hear you. But on the other hand, like, people are just paying $40 for, like, listen, Tom. Like, I can pay $40 for parking. I wouldn't want to, but I could.
Oh,
but
I walk. I got a real problem with that, too, dude. I'll park in the hood, fight off the gangbangers. No,
you don't. Like, but you could pay for parking if you had to, $40, yeah. Right?
Yeah, my wife would have my ass, but yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. I could pay for parking, but I didn't. But people were spending $40 for parking like it was no thing, you know? And I think they were spending their money foolishly. And the point being is, I think Americans are succumbing.
They don't want to look like cheapskates if Danzig's watching.
Well, listen, Dan, I don't know.
Just peel off those 20s and act like it's no big deal.
Why? You should have seen me go spit out my coffee. I wasn't even drinking coffee. I ran out, bought some, spat it out. But the point being is this: I think that to a degree, forms of entertainment are becoming more and more expensive, and Americans are having that bleed them dry through cable, through cell phones, through Netflix, and all this stuff. And I think it, to a degree, purposefully or not purposely, but maybe semi-purposefully, it's a way to control, I guess, and kind of deplete the middle class and paralyze the middle class and basically, you know, bread and circus kind of things. So I think one way to combat against that is not go, in which case concerts will just be for super rich people. But, until there's a turnaround in the economy and until the decline in the middle class ceases, I think that's something people should consider.
I think how much the tickets are is a sign that the economy is thriving. There's no doubt in my mind that the economy is thriving. It is here.
You're both wrong.
In middle America, the economy is thriving.
Both wrong.
What's that?
The people.
You're both wrong.
What is people that I, Tom, what do you mean, Ricky?
Ticket prices have always been going up, regardless of when it was 2008 or now.
Ricky, you don't have the perspective is that when Tom and I in the 90s, the Rolling Stones were like $45. And I was having
$30. I remember when the Rolling Stones played MSU was $30.
I think
it was a lot of money because I was making $7 an hour. So
it really is the Rolling Stones' fault. I think it's the Rolling Stones' fault because between the 94 tour and the 97 tour, it shot up double. And certainly there wasn't a double in cost then.
We better let our young friend talk here, John.
Then between the 97 tour and the 2000 tour, it shot up double. It shot up double again. The point being is ticket prices and entertainment prices have escalated at a rate far higher than inflation, which just goes to show that those things are more expensive than they used to be. You can't argue with that.
I'm not arguing with that, but what I'm saying is that there are other reasons that I think that you're missing. One is that over time, tickets have gone. The ticket industry has just gotten incredible, more and more monopolistic. Not fully.
That's exactly what I'm arguing.
Truth to that. Not done yet.
And then also, what you're also seeing a lot more of is the availability of credit. I'm sure. I mean, from what you guys have been telling me, is that a lot of these people aren't necessarily paying everything up front. It's that they're putting it all on a credit card and then paying it off later on. And so that might be one of the other things. And then
I'd argue that's predatory as well. I mean, you and I are arguing the same exact thing.
Yeah, but I think lots of things are.
I believe there's a lot of conspiracies to bleed the middle class dry. I'm just not sure that that's one of them.
I mean, it might be happening inadvertently,
but let's face it. Of how many middle class people? I mean, I go to a lot of shows, but my peer group doesn't. So I don't think. I mean, most people just don't even go to shows at all. And I don't even think it's money thing. I think it's a.
But Tom, you go to $12 shows. You go to $12 shows, not $200 football games. And a lot of people go to $200 football games. That's really what I'm getting at. You know what I mean?
I'll go to a Tiger game or two a year. But yeah, I know what you
mean. Yeah, by the way, I was not disagreeing. I was just saying that there are other reasons.
So we each have a separate idea.
You said we were both wrong, and then now you're saying you're not disagreeing.
I'm saying that what I meant was like there are other things. I don't think it's just like I don't think it's like this vast conspiracy or anything. When you make credit available, so readily available, people are going to take it.
I don't think that's what happens. I did when I was younger.
Now I know
also inflation. I'm sorry. Like inflation's a big, it has been pretty big, especially in the last 10, 15 years.
But if you look at the cost of entertainment now versus 20 years ago compared to inflation, it's crazy. You know, I mean, look at the cost of college, you know, or cost of medicine, same exact thing. What I'm saying is I don't think there's some big illuminary conspiracy with, you know, people saying, you know, bread and circus, you know, they you know, will bleed them dry through entertainment. But I think Americans need to be wiser. And I do think it's a symptom of an underlying cause. It's not the cause itself, is what I'm saying. So, listen, I mean, honestly, like, it sucks not to be able to go see the Misfits. But if you can't,
hey, I didn't.
If you can't afford, then you probably shouldn't go. But then the other problem is, and that means concerts will only be for like super rich people, which is another problem. But you're not going to fix that through the concert issue. You're going to fix that through underlying economic causes. You know,
but people aren't going to show up. Then there's not enough. There's not enough rich people. I mean, that want to go see.
Tom.
There's not enough rich people that want to go see Judas Priest and Deep Purple tour together. You know what I mean? It's just, well,
I
punk crowd is not a wealthy crowd anyway.
I agree with that, Tom. But Judas Priest might cease to exist, but there certainly are enough rich people to pay a lot to go see sports, and then middle class and poor people can't pay to go see that kind of thing.
Well, I could skip sports. That's fine.
I got priced for the Misfits show here. I couldn't go.
Well, I'm saying that's unfortunate. I think anybody that's a fan of the Misfits should be able to afford.
You know what the bummer is, Ricky? You'll look back at 10 years and you'll be like, oh, why didn't I just spend $100? What difference would it really made in the long term?
It was not $100. No way. It was the second show, and there was nothing cheaper on StubHub than $400 shitty seats.
Oh, can't do StubHub. Well, there was nothing else. Resale. You got to try to get a first wave if you can.
Well, actually,
there was a pre-sale at LA Weekly, I think, and that shit sold out so fast.
See, that's another thing, Tom.
That's what happened to Metallica here. I told you, I really would like to go. It's next year, March. Tickets sold out more than 1 year in advance, and they sold out in pre-sale. And I had a code for one day early, so I could have got them, but my $130, $35 tickets were the cheapest seats, and it would have been $170 a piece or something. I'm like, I've seen this band 10 times. They're old now. What? I'm not doing it. There's just no way.
Let's talk about this story right now, and then we'll get back to what we're going to talk about. We're already running a little bit late, but so what? Anyways, in New York City, City Councilman Brannon, who used to be in the punk band Indecision, punk/hardcore band, has basically introduced legislation, which I believe gets introduced or voted upon tomorrow, which is Wednesday, basically making it illegal for there to be hidden ticket fees. And that's not quite what it sounds like. Basically, what happens is when you go to StubHub, when you go to Ticketmaster, you know, it's like Misfit, $65. And then you click OK, purchase. And it's like, oh, it's actually $100. He's making it illegal within the city limits to do that. Rather, when you see how much the price of the ticket is, it has to be the final price. So a couple of questions here is this going to change anything? Do you think this is going to pass? Or does Ticketmaster just have their hands in too many politicians' pockets and this will never pass? Further, does Ticketmaster have their hands in city council people's pockets, in which case maybe it could pass at a smaller scale level, New York City, which Ticketmaster might not own yet?
Shoot, I missed the end of that. Say again?
Basically, this law makes it when you go to buy a ticket, it says the final price is the first thing you see, not the last thing you see, right? So the question is, will that make a difference at all? But also, will this law pass? But also, the question is, will this get voted down because Ticketmaster has their hands in so many people's pockets? If you remember, 10 years ago, Ticketmaster was put up as a monopoly, and bizarrely, Congress said it was not a monopoly, which is bizarre. I mean, how is
Ticketmaster not Live Nation or vice versa? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how is that not a monopoly? You know what I mean? So, but the question is, because this is at a local level and not a state or national level, maybe Ticketmaster doesn't have their hands in city council people's pockets, so they could make it illegal within New York City to do this kind of thing.
I don't know. How is this legal?
How is what legal?
How is this justifiably done?
How is the law like, legal?
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of see what Ricky's saying. I mean, for one thing, I love it when government tries to tell private business how they should do their business because there's always unforeseen consequences. I don't know that this is anything that's going to be anything.
If anything, for me, like, I mean, if it passes, it'll be interesting to see what they do because, listen, whether they do it or not, I don't see the fees going away.
No, it's gonna be the same price. You just know right off the bat. But it'll be less deceptive. Yeah, so.
So, I'm curious.
Government telling not if, you get what wait. I'm saying. Government telling people they can't be deceptive. I mean, the irony, right?
I don't understand how. What's it? Fuck! I just lost my train of thought.
Sorry, Brian.
I just don't understand how they I think this is a bit of a ploy in that this is probably just trying to get the conversation started. Again, I don't know how this is going to, I mean, what's going to happen if they just ignore the law? They're going to get fined? Fine. I mean, that last time they did that, nothing really happened. I got like some free tickets that to shows I would never go to.
Oh, the Ticketmaster lawsuit. Yeah.
Well,
that whole thing.
Well, you're right. Tickets, so, like, I don't
know. So again, like, I don't know how this is. I think this is more of a, not a stunt, but just a way to get the conversation about this going again. How one city is going to enforce a website that dominates the entire hemisphere's ticket sales is not going to be able to do it alone. This would have to be a federal thing. And I don't even see how it's justifiably legal to do this. Well, if you're just singling out one thing, and then John, that's more your wheelhouse. So I'm not like questioning it to be a dick. I'm questioning it because I don't know.
I do agree that this is really more of a ploy to get the conversation started, which I approve. I do think it would have somewhat of an effect because I think Ticketmaster, not that they'd be embarrassed, but they'd have such a negative reaction from people seeing that they're paying $40 on a $60 ticket that they would lower it a little bit at least. You know, they also might make it even more deceptive.
I'm getting pressure on them.
I'm very surprised by both of you that you are against Ticketmaster being exploitative. I mean,
I'm against excessive government regulation of private business in general. So,
do you think the government should to determine whether or not meat is safe to eat?
That has nothing. That's not the same thing. I'm sorry. Tickets are non-essential product, and you can't argue that they are. It's totally different.
Also. Well, meat's non-essential. I never said I disagreed with this. I just was curious. I had more questions than whether I agreed with it or not. I would like to know what the actual bill does before I.
It doesn't do anything.
I'm just saying. I don't know.
Listen,
there's not a whole lot here.
I'm a pragmatic, so for busting up Ticketmaster anyway, I'm all for it. To answer Ricky's question, how could they enforce it? The answer is New York City is a gigantic area for online ticket sales. You know, so if Ticketmaster wanted to sell tickets within the New York area. When you went to buy tickets for a New York show, it would have to conform to the requirements of the law if the law was passed. So it wouldn't regulate the whole world or the whole country, but it would regulate New York City, which is probably the biggest ticket sale area in the world. Well, maybe not the world, but in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, just based on what I'm hearing, I'd be surprised if it passes. This is definitely – I mean, this is his like forte. I think this is something to get the conversation started. I don't know – I'd be surprised if it passed.
If you recall, there was a law that made it illegal for online bots to buy tickets and resell them, which did pass.
Yeah, that's true. But that seemed like a more of an unfair practice thing. This, I mean, I don't know.
Nobody has to buy tickets. The bottom line is the only way we're going to really break up Ticketmaster, John, is stop buying tickets. That's all there's to it.
Well, you're right. You're right. But first of all, Tom, I disagree that what did you say just before that? How'd you phrase that?
The only way we're going to really hurt Ticketmaster is if we stop buying tickets.
No, before that, the line before that.
I don't know.
Oh, anyway, basically we're saying is no one has to buy tickets.
Yeah, no one has to buy tickets. Yeah.
However, companies are not allowed to engage in unfair and deceptive business practices. I mean, that law is over 150 years old. I've sued banks over that issue. You know what I mean? Like a bank can't
sue Ticketmaster, John? We got you. We'll support you.
I have a question,
Maybe we should sue Ticketmaster.
And then I'll end with two more $5 vouchers that don't even cover the freaking service charge.
No, here's the thing, Tom. You and I will not go into the class act. It'll just be you and me. We want $1 million each.
Against the world. Free tickets for life, John. Free tickets for life.
I do have a question, John. Is it – because I'm just genuinely interested. But if – because the fees are eventually – you eventually see how much the fees are once you get to the final page.
Correct.
When you're about to click buy. Is that still deceptive?
The answer is I would argue yes, and here's why. And it goes back to the class action lawsuit. The reason Ticketmaster settled the class action lawsuit is because they were just tacking on $2.50, and they called it like there was a convenience fee, but then another $2.50.
It's convenience like screwed.
The $2.50 like wasn't associated with any cost whatsoever. They were just adding on money just to add on money. So I would argue that when you go to click out, you know, the final fees, the fees aren't clear. It's not clear why you're paying those fees, and it's not clear that you actually have to pay those fees. And also, I mean, it is illegal to sell like a limited item And then when someone goes to buy it, they change the price. That's an illegal practice. Like, for example,
John, you remember when I told you the story about the Slayer tickets, John? They said they were $29.50, and I got the tickets, and they only said $21.50 on them.
Well, I'm pretty sure that's illegal, Tom. I'm pretty sure that's illegal. I mean, let's sue. Let's do it. Let's sue Ticketmaster. Let's take them all.
I still have the physical tickets, even though I resold them and made a profit.
Well, anyways, anything for busting up Ticketmaster, I'm all for. Let's play a song, and then we'll come back, and then we'll bullshit some more. It's goth week. I'm going to play a goth song. Should we do Bauhaus, the classic goth band, or should we do something more obscure?
I don't – you know, I have – we're doing goth, huh? You want me to take the first one, John?
Oh, well, you don't have to do goth. I'll do a goth song, and you guys can decide if you want to do goth or not.
Oh, okay. Let's do Bauhaus. Go ahead. You do what you want. I'll do a goth song, too.
Let's do Bauhaus, and I'll do
You're not going to do Bela Lugosi's Dead?
Well, no, I mean, that's so long, and it's like the most common one. Yeah, there are some
diversion, but yeah, it's like 9 minutes long.
I'm going to do Crowds, which is a more obscure Bauhaus track, but I think it's quintessentially Bauhausian, if you will. So this is Crowds by Bauhaus off the bonus track of In the Flat Field. No, actually, I'm taking it all back. We're doing In the Flat Field. No, Double Dare. Double Dare. Oh. This track is banging. This is Double Dare by Bauhaus. And that was Double Dare by Bauhaus. I love that track. I love In the Flat. I love every Bauhaus album.
From the ever decisive John Gentile.
So listen, we've got a lot to talk about, but we said you guys still want to talk about records and then blast through some news at the end.
If you want, we can save records. It's getting late. I don't care. Whatever you want to do. There wasn't that much great news.
Yeah, let's see. Let's do a little bit of records, and then we'll. There's not a whole lot of great news here. Let's do a little bit of records, and then we'll talk about some news, and then next week we'll do episode 400. So Ricky, kick us off. What kind of cool records did you get lately?
Okay, so I mean, a lot of my records coincide with the amazing shows that I've gone to in the last like month. I mean, I saw Smoking Popes with Bad Cop, Bad Cop. I saw Descendants with Audio Karate and Radkey. I saw Bad Religion in a 400-person venue at the Troubadour with Tartar Control, which I reviewed for Punk News. It was amazing. They played all of Suffer live for the encore. I saw the Lawrence Arms the day after that with Red City Radio and Sincere Engineer. Last weekend, I saw Youth Brigade. For the first time, finally. I always miss them at Punk Rock Bowling, and I knew I'd miss them this time at Punk Rock Bowling, so I'm glad I got to see them. Super cheap ticket, just to keep that for that. And then I saw the day after that, I saw Pairs with High and Fireburn, and that was an awesome show at a really cool venue called the Toxic Toast Theater, which is right next to the Toxic Toast Records record store in Long Beach. It was awesome. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. So a lot of my stuff that I picked up a lot of records at shows in the so far. The first one I'll talk about is a tour. I got a couple tour editions. I saw the Bomb Pops record release show for their 7-inch that came out earlier this year called Dear Beer. And I picked up their gold with white splatter edition of it. I think only 100 of those or so were made. Picked that up. And then when I saw the Lawrence Arms, their We Are the Champions of the World record came on double gold disc. So I picked that up at the show. And then when I saw Pairs and Fireburn, which Fireburn, if you don't know, is a newer hardcore band, which is fronted by Israel Joseph from the Bad Brains. Right, John?
Right, right. The second singer of the Bad Brains, who was on the Rise record, yeah.
So, and I saw them once before open for, it might have been Blood Clot and Final Conflict. I might be wrong on that, but and they were okay, but this time they were amazing. Wait, I'm sorry,
what did you say, Ricky?
Oh, I said, I think I saw them open for.
Oh, okay, yeah. The guitarist is the guy from Nails, notably as well.
Yeah. Oh, maybe that's why, because Nails was headlining that show. Okay. And they were okay the first time I saw them. They got a new drummer, and they kicked so much ass at opening for Pairs. So I picked up their record called Don't Stop the Youth. That came out last year, I think. And it's like a blue with black marble color on it, which is really cool. When I saw Bad Cop open for the Smoking Popes, I didn't get a record there, but they did sign my copy of Warriors, which is like on the green and pink splatter vinyl.
Ricky, then, where on the street is that Bad Cop is actually like phenomenal live right now. Can you confirm?
Yes. And it's funny because I've reviewed their show live, their live shows quite a bit for Punk News and some other outlets. They've gotten, especially, I think the pivotal moment for their live show was, you have to understand, I've seen them open, the first time I ever saw them was opening for Me First and the Gimme Gimmes. I saw them play a bunch of small venues and bars too, and they were great. But when they, after they came off of Warped Tour, I think last year or the year before, their live show got so much more confident and so much better. And just a lot, they're a lot tighter now, especially after this record. And they're doing, I think they're on the Punk and Drublic tour right now, and they seem to be doing really well. And that's really cool to hear because they're hometown, you know, quote unquote hometown heroes here. When I saw them open for Propagandhi, that's when I realized like, oh boy, they've really improved a lot. And when I saw them, they had it was a sold out show when they opened for Propagandhi, but they, for them, almost the whole theater was sold out by the time they got on stage. Like, they can really draw a crowd, especially here now. So yeah, go see Bad Cop, Bad Cop. They're super fun. And their show is really good. And the last thing I'll talk about, actually, I'll talk about two more. I got Red City Radio's Sky Tigers, EP on, it's black vinyl, but on the back, there's like there's a pink version in, etched into the back of it, into the B-side, which is kind of cool. And then I've been meaning to get this comp called 12th and G, which I think was an old DIY venue out in Chino, California, which is sort of near like Anaheim's, Orange County-ish. And it's a really cool, it has a really cool list, of like local bands, it's a really neat collection for people that are fans of the current, like kind of underground LA scene. I played a song from this band recently. Their Horror Squad's on here. Turkish Techno's on here. The Maxis, Dudes Night, French Exit is on here, who I think recently broke up, maybe a couple of years ago. And then Dead to Me's No Lullabies is on here too, which is kind of the big seller for me. So this is kind of like a little piece that I've been keeping an eye on and waiting for. That's about it for me. But I mean, I've been going. There have been a lot. It's been quite a bit of a dry spell here for shows. But the last month has been insanely good. So, and then I got Punk Rock Bowling coming up. So I'll probably do some record shopping while I'm there too. I want to get one of those Fat Records comps that they're pulling out for the Fat Records club show. But that's about it.
Tom, what'd you pick up lately?
I want to second the Bad Cop thing. I saw them in Detroit twice last year, and they were great. They were great both times. So, anyway, I've been buying records like a maniac. I need to slow down, actually. I went out. My daughter wanted to go record shopping on Saturday, so we went out, and I got two Overkill albums that I didn't have, and I got the new Vitamin X album, which is called Age of Paranoia, and I got the last Vitamin X album, which is called About to Crack, and I got the Nine Shocks Terror, who is a great Midwest hardcore band that had Tony from Fuck You Pay Me in it. I got their album Zen and the Art of Beating Your Ass. I got a couple of Testament albums that I didn't have. I got the Old Firm Casuals self-titled that Pirates Press just reissued. It's a clear one-sided 12-inch, and the second side is etched, so that's super cool. And I got the new Booze and Glory 12-inch single, London Skinhead Crew, which is also really cool, and it's got the words cut out of the edge of a 12-inch, but it's only like a little bigger than a 7-inch. And I couldn't figure out how to play the stupid thing. Every time I kept putting it on, the needle kept like just getting stuck in a groove. It actually plays from the inside out. So it's kind of cool. So anyway, I picked up a bunch of cool. Oh, and so I told you I got both the last two Vitamin X albums. I've been really getting into Dutch hardcore, and I got this other great Dutch hardcore band that I was kind of unfamiliar with, but they're called Citizen Patrol. And I just ordered a bunch of stuff from Havoc Records, which is like a hardcore label, like a partner label of Profane Existence out of Minneapolis.
Davey Havoc of Code 13.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I also got a stack of 7-inches from him really cheap. So I would like to reel it in a little bit. I don't know if that'll happen, but I should.
Yeah, man. I've been out of control.
What'd you get, Jack? Sorry, John, before you
Ricky, just real quick.
No. Just before, I want to give a shout out to one of the commenters, because I actually met one at the Lawrence Arms show I went to. Exiles Among You, just happened to run into him at the Lawrence Arms show. He was really cool, really nice, and you know, very complimentary to the staff and everything. So just a shout out to him.
Damn, Ricky, you got black helicopters over your house, or what? Or is that you, John?
That's not me.
I think that's the cops. I think there's been a police helicopter flying over my abode for the last like 12 hours.
He's like hunkered down in South Central.
Honestly, it's like that scene out of Goodfellas.
Oh, you're like getting paranoid.
Yeah.
Flushing all your drugs down the toilet.
Remember, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not after you.
We needed that cocaine, Karen.
I've been picking up some pretty cool rare stuff lately. I tell you, like, people, well, I like Discogs a lot, and I've been going to shows, but Discogs is great for getting some rare stuff cheap. Like, if no one's bought it before, you can get it for really cheap. One thing I got was Crisis Man. You guys know the Crisis Man cassette. You guys know Crisis Man?
No,
I don't.
Not at all. It came out last year. That's Ross of Ceremonies, like side project. And honestly, if you like old school Ceremony, you'll like Crisis Man because it's a straight up hardcore record, a lot like the first Ceremony record, maybe a little bit more punkish with Ross singing like he used to. Yeah, I was kind of puzzled by it because in interviews, Ross has made it clear that he doesn't really want to do that kind of music anymore, and he kind of wants to do more post-punk stuff like L-Shaped Man. But then Crisis Man is like a straight up hardcore punk record or cassette. It's really good. Maybe he was just doing it for fun. Another interesting thing I got was another cassette. It's the Digital Underground Untitled Promo Tape, which is an alternate. It's pretty rare. It's an alternate version of the Future Sex out, not Future Sex. What's it called? Future Rhythm album by Digital Underground with a different mix and actually a song that they never released except for this promo tape, which is really cool. The album itself actually isn't that good though. It just goes something's rare doesn't mean it's good. It's a little bit too mellow for me, but still, it's kind of like the completion of my Digital Underground collection. So right now, I've got like every officially released Digital Underground track, which is pretty cool. Another cool thing that I got was I saw the Melvins about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and the Melvins on tour, they always have tour only merchandise, which
they
I wish
have a
more
huge
bands.
Huge selection of vinyl and stuff with them every time. It's amazing. Yeah,
why do you guys think more bands don't do tour only stuff? That seems like such an easy way to make money.
I don't know if that's all. Is that tour only stuff, or is that just all their limited stuff? I didn't know it was tour only.
The answer is it's both. Melvins have ultra limited stuff, but on tour they also have they actually have rare versions of the ultra limited stuff that you can only get on tour.
Yeah, I think it's a really fun thing. I mean, it does attract a lot more like flippers, I think. But overall, I think it's a really fun idea. And what they should also do is if they want to make even more money for the road, they should sign them too.
Well, Melvins do that actually, in fact. But I mean,
more bands should do that. Follow the Melvins thing.
Yeah, I wish. I hope somebody from a band would like write in and like. It seems so easy, just to make like a handmade CDR. Which actually, I've got a super rare Jeff Rosenstock CDR that he did when he first started doing solo stuff. He put out a CDR with some exclusive stuff on it that that like nobody even. I don't even think it's on Discogs. So I mean, as a fan, that's awesome to have that stuff. So I wish more bands would do that. Melvins wise, I got it's pretty cool. It's a very rare version of their album Bassist Loaded, where they took like old records from the 50s and basically just stamped Melvins on top of the record, you know, and then put the record in the old record sleeve. So it's kind of a cool thing. And it's got some art and that kind of stuff too. I wanted to mention another cool thing I got, and then we'll play a song. Tom, you'll appreciate this. I got Danzig 1 on vinyl. How do you like that?
I like it.
And honestly, it's...
I could have bought it for $9 when it first came out, but I didn't, and so it's cool you have it.
I would say I'm usually not one of these guys who, vinyl sounds better. I usually think CD sound as good as vinyl, but the Danzig 1 vinyl really does sound really, really good. Like it's like really separated, the sounds, and it just sounds great.
You should take a picture of it next to your Danzig tattoo and put it on our...
Yeah. No, or I should do like a pose where like I'm clearly in the thing and I'm showing off my sexy body and I'm like, oh, I was rocking this today. And like the actual album is like maybe 10% of the picture. The rest of my sexy body.
Oh, you're talking
body.
Like some broad, like with a tight shirt. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway,
broad is not a proper term. Some young female. Dude, I see so much in that group. I think I'm going to get a Crimson Ghost tattoo. I mean, I'm like getting peer pressured by them. I have a spot on my rear calf, and I have a Jason Voorhees face, and I think the Crimson Ghost will go really well right underneath it. So,
well, listen, you'll get a lot of likes, man. I mean,
that's what I'm all about, dude. I'll do anything to get the likes from the 7,000 group.
Listen, all you gotta do is post a picture of Danzig, and you'll get like 7,000 likes,
like your CD with like a glass of bourbon next to it. I hope nobody's listening to this. We love you guys.
Yeah, we might get booted by D-Man.
They just show up at our house and beat us senseless.
All right, Tom, play a track.
All right, I'm gonna play a goth-ish track from. Man, this is a tough one because I actually do like some of that older stuff like that. I'm going to do Sisters of Mercy.
Ooh.
When You Don't See Me. This was kind of their biggest hit, but it's a cool song. So Sisters of Mercy, When You Don't See Me.
And that was Sisters of Mercy doing You Don't See Me. Cool thing about Sisters of Mercy is they've got a lot of really cool 12-inch EPs with like exclusive stuff on it. So if you're a collector, a great band to collect. Kind of expensive, though. Let's blast through just a little bit of news here, and then we'll wrap this up. First thing, everybody's excited. New Nightbirds album. Are you guys excited?
Yes. So stoked. This
it's
is
like
now
one of the few things that all three of us really like. That's pretty cool.
If this is a if this is coming out this year, which I think it has a chance of it happening.
It's done recording, right? They're done recording it.
Yeah, Nightbirds have finished recording the new album. I think it's not mixed yet.
It's got to be out this year, dude. It doesn't take that long.
And here's the thing.
They're not Rush.
Any label guesses?
Bat, probably.
Bat did the last one, right?
They did the last
one. Yeah.
Before that, it was a great label called Grave Mistake that I love.
Yeah.
Well, what I was going to say is, like, for me, this is my second most anticipated record of the year behind the Dead to Me record. So I'm very excited. I'm super stoked to hear where they go next. Like, especially because Mutiny on Muscle Beach was phenomenal.
Yeah, it really was. Like,
phenomenal.
Did you think it was better than the one before? What was the one before? It was The Other Side of Darkness, right?
That was Suburbia.
Yeah, you're right. Born to Die in Suburbia.
Born to Die. Did you think it was better than that? I thought they were pretty much. I thought Born to Die in Suburbia might have been better, or they were real close.
I thought it was way better.
They were real close.
Really?
They were. I thought they were real close, but Mutiny at Muscle Beach really. It was a little bit more condensed overall record of their sound. It captured the sound in a less amount of.
I mean,
songs.
I had it like number two on my year end list. I love the album. Don't get me wrong. I just didn't really think it was any different than the one before it.
It was my number two as well, but it made it to the number one spot for the
cumulatively, because everybody had it on their list, and everybody had it on their list last year.
And I still blast it all the time. It's like this band has been on fire forever. It's been great.
I did think it was way better than the album before. I thought it was more concise, more unique, and I thought the songs were better written. Like with Born to Buy in Suburbia, I could kind of tone out during the record. For me, Mutiny and Muscle Beats, like every track is like unique and identifiable. Do you guys think this is just going to be Nightbirds again, or do you think it's going to be something different?
I hope it's just Nightbirds.
I think we might get a little bit of a stray from the original sound, but I mean, I wouldn't mind that. I think if it works with their overall sound and they kind of maybe experiment a little bit, I'm totally open to it. If they kind of go off the deep end with the experimental, I think it's probably a 50-50 shot. They had CJ Ramon on their album last album. I can't wait to see if they have any guest appearances on there. I'm very, very excited for this. I can't wait.
Well, fair enough. I think everybody's excited, and we don't have a whole lot of info aside from that. But it's not going to suck. That's for sure. You know, it's going to be
for
a rocker
for sure.
And honestly, they seem pretty hungry because they've been on hiatus. So I think
only for
come-
a year though. You know, they made this. That's they made true. Kind of a big deal. One of the guys had a baby or something. They were taking a year off. Cool, you know. But the fact of the matter is, they didn't really take any longer than any normal band takes. If they wouldn't have said anything, nobody would have noticed.
Yeah, but here's the thing. They don't tour. They need to come out and tour the West Coast.
They'll do like an excursion out. Like, they'll come as far as like Chicago and like do two shows and go back. You know, they'll like come out for a Friday, Saturday, and then head back.
Nightbirds, I know you're listening. Come out to the West Coast and tour.
Oh,
because,
I know they are. They're all hunched around their little transistor radio right now taking this
I know you're listening. Please. Please play Los Angeles. It's bigger.
And drive
very
across
much
the country
do.
So the rest of us can see you, too. Don't fly out there. Drive across so the rest of us can see you on the way.
Well, speaking of a Nightbirds brother band, the Mighty Mighty Ballstones have released a new track. It's called A Wonderful Day for the Race. And it's the Ballstones doing the Ballstones thing. It's relatively upbeat, sunny ska sounds. Tom and Ricky, did you guys dig this track? Do you dig the Ballstones? The Ballstones going to have a big comeback and be on radio right between Rihanna
fourth wave,
and Taylor Swift.
Fourth wave Sky Revival? Are we fifth wave? What wave are we on now?
Ninth, I believe.
I've seen the Ballstones once, and it was a fun show, but this is the kind of ska that, like, this uppity, you know, like upbeat kind of ska that's not really that aggressive.
I'll say uppity is not the same thing as upbeat. Uppity sort of means snobby.
I misspoke. I meant upbeat.
Snobby ska bastards.
Upbeat and it's a little too cute, if that's too cute sounding, if that makes any sense. I like ska that's a little bit more aggressive, like i.e. the Suicide Machines and
punk. You're talking about punk bands with horns.
Yeah, but still, like,
and that's
like,
the way boss tones can be sometimes. But
this was a little too clean for me. But people seem to be stoked, and that's a good
they were
thing.
Huge, man. I think this is a big entry level or gateway band for a lot of people. You know, they had a huge radio hit, but it was a long time ago. I saw them at one of the real early Warped tours, like probably 97 or 99 or something like that. And then I saw them a few years. I've seen them a few times over the last 20 plus years. And they're sort of one of those bands where I don't really listen to records, but they're fun to watch. You know, they put on a pretty good show.
Yeah. They put on a really fun show, but I'm just, and I'll definitely see them. Actually, aren't they playing Punk Rock Bowling?
I mean, I have a few other albums, but I think the last one is like 20 years old.
Yeah, I think this is long overdue for them to put something out. But when I did see them, it was a fun show. I just was like, but I have listened to the records. It's just not. I get a little impatient, to be honest.
Speaking of people being impatient, Interview Magazine is shutting down. The readers were impatient in that they didn't want to buy the magazine anymore. Interview Magazine was founded by Andy Warhol in 1969, and it's been rejiggered a couple of times. I guess the angle of Interview Magazine was they have pretty famous celebrities interviewing other pretty famous celebrities, and the interviews would often be kind of weird or off the wall, or I guess strikingly small talk. That is, you know, what'd you have for dinner? You know, what did you think of Wendy's versus Burger King, stuff like that. And in a way, it's very much the precursor to Vice, to tell you the truth, in that, like, the type of interviews they used to do, if you will. Did you guys ever read Interview Magazine? Are you sad to see Interview Magazine go?
I never read it, but I gotta tell you, I really like that idea of having celebrities interview each other. It's probably a really good read.
Theoretically.
Tom, do you care about Interview Magazine?
I never read it either, John. I just it's not on my radar at all. I didn't know it started by Andy Warhol. I think that's actually kind of interesting. I might have been more interested in it if I would have known that.
Yeah, it definitely carried that kind of vibe of, like, you know, Andy Warhol was artistic, but he was also kind of a flake, you know, and it carries both of those vibes, you know. I rather enjoyed Interview Magazine. Some of it was kind of some of the interviews would be, it's like you get this profoundly interesting person and you're just talking about, like, stupid crap, like how much do you pay for gas, you know, which is amusing once. Oh. You know, but after you do that kind of interview once, it's not funny anymore. However, sometimes the interview would be. What was nice about Interview Magazine is a lot of interviews, not at Punk News, I say, but a lot of places like Entertainment Weekly or wherever. It'll be like, so Robert Downey Jr., you're Iron Man. What's it like wearing the suit? Why do you like Iron Man? What's happening next with Iron Man? Like, it would be, they would be real conversations instead of basically, you know, PR conversations, if you will. So it's sad, to a bigger degree, it's sad that another physical publication is shutting down. I love physical publications. I love physical magazines. They're so much more fun to read than, you know, clicking through this and clicking through that. So it's a real bummer. But what are you going to do, man? It's people don't want them anymore, you know? I do think it represents a decline in quality and a decline of literacy, to tell you the truth, though. Because, like, written things are generally – I mean, printed things are generally better written than online things. And because, I guess, you have to invest more to print out something – and so I do worry about the repercussions of that and the general decline in people's literacy, comprehension, intuition, and analysis, that kind of thing.
John, I'm curious. I was talking to someone about this because we were talking about, like, the vinyl resurgence. Do you think that at some point print will probably bottom out and then have some sort of, like, novelty resurgence, like cassettes and vinyl?
Excellent insight, and I hadn't thought of that, but I think yes, and to a degree that's why zines have always existed and will exist for the foreseeable future, because it's a physical product you make yourself that you can look at and it's fun to pass around. So yes.
Yeah, so there's a newer zine here in town, which and it's a labor of love old-fashioned zine, and I was sort of encouraged by that, like, it's like only a year or two old.
Yeah, I think so. I think we might be seeing a lot of the hysteria that this is going, the big legacy magazines are clearly going down. This one, Rolling Stone,
newspapers are screwed.
Newspapers too, but I think at some point we might we might see a rebirth, and we might get better stuff for it, and people might be willing to pay a premium for it, like we are with vinyl right now.
I don't know.
So we might be watching the bottoming out of the print, of the current legacy, the legacy print media right now. That's just a theory I've been
wondering. Actually, I might agree with that. We'll have to see. I mean, who knows? You know, I think it's sad, but you know, I've actually pitched back and forth in my brain the idea of starting a punk news magazine. The only problem is it's a lot of money to put up front, and you can't just do one. Because like if you just do one, what's the point? You got to do like four or five or ten issues, you know? I've got a pretty cool idea, I think. But, I mean, is it worth the time and investment? Am I going to make any money off of it? You know, probably not.
Oh, you'd be lucky to make your money back.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Oh, you could easily make $10,000. Spend $20,000 to make it, and you'll make $10,000.
If you're lucky. one last story is that Parliament suddenly has released their first album in 38 years. Of course, that's George Clinton.
I did not know that they hadn't put out an album since 1980. Well,
it's a little misleading, and here's why.
Because they repackaged the hell out of everything?
Well, no. It's that if the listeners don't know, Parliament and Funkadelic were two different bands. And they are legendary, phenomenal bands. If you haven't checked out Funkadelic's Cosmic Slop or Maggot Brain or Let's Take It to the Stage, you need to stop listening and run out and get those albums right now. If you haven't listened to Parliament's Up for the Downstroke, if you haven't listened to Parliament's Chocolate City, you need to run out and get those. Or Clones of Dr. Funkenstein, you need to run out and get those albums. Those are amazing, groundbreaking albums that still sound fresh. So in the 70s, George Clinton had two bands, Parliament and Funkadelic, even though most of the people were in both bands. Funkadelic is kind of the rock, weirder band, and Parliament is kind of the funnier funk band, if you will. Both of those bands broke up in 1980. However, immediately afterwards, George Clinton put out a solo record, or not very shortly after, called George Clinton. The George Clinton solo record is basically the same lineup as Parliament was in 1980. And then after that, basically, he put out some solo records and some records called George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic, or George Clinton the P-Funk All-Stars. So basically, consistently, every two or three years since 1970, George Clinton, well, from 1970 to 1980, he put out like 25 albums. But from 1980 till now, about every 3 years, he's put out an album called George Clinton, which really is him and both his Parliament and Funkadelic collaborators. A couple of years ago, they put out an album under the title Funkadelic, but it wasn't really Funkadelic. It was just kind of like, I actually felt kind of bad because like George Clinton didn't really have that much to do with it. It was really more like his friends put it out, and it was a pretty weak release. I fear that this Parliament album is going to be the same thing. It's Parliament in name only, and it's really just like people associated with George Clinton putting out stuff. And him, like, maybe singing on a couple of the tracks, but not even really. So, I mean, I wish him the best. I interviewed him once, and he was amazing. And he was so sharp and clever.
He's going to retire from touring next year.
He's like 80. I've seen him twice. One time it was okay. The second time it was absolutely amazing. And George Clinton, he's an icon, you know, like Lee Scratch Perry, like, I'm trying to think of like Danzig, these people that have just had massively successful long-running careers in music and have really always maintained a certain high level of creativity. So I'm glad George Clinton's still doing his thing. I don't know if this Parliament album is going to be that good. It might be, and I don't even really think it's a Parliament album, but even so, it's cool he's still doing stuff. If you get a chance to see him live, you should, because it's a really cool live show. Ricky, play a song.
Play a song? Okay, so I'm going to stray from our Goth Week thing that we have going on here, because I've been waiting for a reason to play this song, not the song, but this band on the podcast for quite a while. And before I play it, I do need to explain some stuff. Before I was ever really like as into punk rock as I am now, I kind of, you know, floated between genres of different subgenres of just rock. And
new metal and slightly stupid influenced ska rock.
No. A band that I found, they're sort of like this, I don't know if they're fully DIY, but they've been doing really good stuff in the metal scene, kind of. And so there's this band called Psycho Stick that I've been following since I was like early high school, maybe.
I remember that name.
Maybe even what's it called? maybe even middle school, to be honest. It might even be middle school, late middle school. And they put out what they are. They're a comedy death metal band, and they do really good stuff. And they're finally putting out their first record. They're seeing if they want to put out more of their records on vinyl, but they're, for its 15th anniversary, they're putting their very first album out on vinyl through crates.com, which it's QRATES.com. And this is the first time they're putting any other music out on vinyl. I could not be happier because I love that. I love this record. There's one song called, actually, no, I'm going to play the song that's called Beer on this record. It's called the record is called We Couldn't Think of a Title. The song I'm going to play is called Beer. But if you like this song, I really recommend you watch the music video for the song Pluh, P-L-U-H. And it's one of the funniest music videos I've still ever seen. It's really, really well done. It's done. You can tell the video was put out in 2003. I mean, it was and you can tell, and they just they're really funny about it. And that's all. I don't want to give too much away. But again, Psycho Sick is putting out their album We Couldn't Think of a Title out on vinyl for its 15th anniversary. I'm really stoked. Here's the song Beer from that album. Take a listen.
I like beer cause it is good. I drink beer because I should. If there was a song to sing, I sing it and beer you bring. I drink beer when I am sad, cause the beer it makes me glad. Now there's nothing left to say, so let's go drink beer.
Beer is good! Beer is good! Beer is good! And some beer is good! Beer is good! Beer is good!
Let's go drink some beer!
Real crappy, but cold beer will make me happy. When I throw up on the floor, I can go and drink some more. They say beer will make me dumb. It aren't no good with pizza. Now that we have drunk some beer, let's go drive a car.
Beer is good! Beer is good! Beer is good! And stop! Beer is good! Beer is good! Beer is good!
Let's go drink some beer!
And that was Psycho Stick doing Beer. Ricky, listen to this. While you and I were talking, Tom was on punknews.org, and he said that he thought The Devil's Reign was the second coming of Walk Among Us.
That's a misquote. That's an incomplete quote. For one thing, I was obviously
I like misquote as it misfits as a misquote.
Yeah. Oh, one of you must have been blabbering on. I did go on.
Wait,
there
that,
real briefly.
No, that, isn't that borderline blasphemous? Shouldn't you be kicked out of that?
That's
Facebook
not
group
what
now?
I said. Here, listen, here's what I said, Ricky.
He said that Michael Graves is his favorite and the original.
Here's my first comment. So you know I'm full of shit, right? I said, I mean, obviously I was joking, but I said, let me see. Oh, come on. Load, damn it. Load.
Like most people, I prefer the Misfits with their original singer, Michael Graves. I guess this Glenn Danzig character was an okay second choice.
It's a pretty good that's a pretty good troll, Tom. By the way, but I do have to say, America. For what it's worth, American Psycho is a great record.
Well, a lot of people seem to think that. And then Natty Boy, who's a regular commenter from the Baltimore area, I believe. Hey, I actually like both the Graves albums. I said I have them both in the Rarities album, too, which I think was called Cuts from the Crypt or something. Though I can't imagine the last time I listened to them. I actually prefer the Jerry Only fronted The Devil's Reign. They were much better live with Graves singing than with Only singing. That was my comment. And then somebody said, oof, got to disagree there. Looking for Corpses, another regular. Oof, got to disagree there. The two Graves records are not bad. Devil's Reign, on the other hand, oh boy. I said, no love for the Devil's Reign? Question mark. After Project 1950, it was like the second coming of Walk Among Us. That's more of an insult to Project 1950 than a compliment to Devil's Reign. But anyway, right, so this is going to be our show from now on. We're going to sit around and justify the comments we make on the site.
Well, as always, speaking of comments, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. We love getting your mail. And we'll see you next week for episode 400 for sure.
This has been a Velour Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@velourundergroundstudios.com.